Well, happy new year, everybody. It's the Bob McCowan podcast. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you.
Happy new year, Robert.
Same to you. Hope you, and I assume you had an enjoyable holiday.
Very quiet, a very COVID quiet holiday, you know. And I say that there was the holidays were pretty quiet before COVID too. So
every day was pretty quiet before COVID.
Yeah.
Or during COVID or before the holidays.
Yeah.
We did have a couple things happen while we were resting. The NHL is not going to the Olympics.
No.
Of course, at this point in time, there's some question as to whether there will even be an Olympics, but I'm guessing the IOC will push forward. What do you think?
Well, based on the amount of promos that our friends at NBC did last night during the Sunday night football game, I think the Olympics are a go because they tried to promote everything through the whole football game last night. So I suspect that if anybody knows whether there's a games or not, it would be NBC. So I think the Chinese Olympic Committee, I think the Chinese government, and I think the IOC are adamant that there will be an Olympics, and we'll go from there and see what happens.
Do you care?
No, not really. No. I mean, it's, you know, there aren't going to be spectators. And as much as there are times that I enjoyed Tokyo in the summertime, I didn't really get engrossed in the Olympics because part of it for me is watching the people, watching the fans and enjoying the event. So, it's one of those things there, a little bit of the luster of the Olympics is gone when there aren't people there to enjoy it.
Over this time, we also saw the passing of John Madden, who I believe was 85 when he died. Madden, legendary, first as a coach. And I think it's important to point out that he was coach of the Raiders for, I think, 10 years, never had a losing season, only won one Super Bowl, but had great teams for many, many years, and then walked away. Quite shockingly, saying that he
had nothing else to prove, right?
Had nothing else to prove and didn't want to coach anymore.
Well, when you lose the passion, and he lost the passion to do it, but he didn't lose the passion to be in the game of football. And in so many ways, I believe John Madden, and this has been said since his passing, he rewrote the book on how to be a TV sports analyst. He made it simple. He made it fun to watch. He didn't over speak. He didn't talk to you in too much football parlance. It was an enjoyable experience to listen to John Madden have as much fun as the players were having. And that's what made him special.
Well, so where would he rank in your list of all time commentators?
Well, as an analyst, I'm not sure there are any better, Bob, particularly the fact that he transcended generations, and there were people by the time he stopped, working in the, I think 2000 and gosh, was it 2006, that he was, no, it had to be later than that, 2013. He had talked to five different generations of football fans. And the ability for that to happen was truly remarkable.
The other thing I thought we should mention happened yesterday, Sunday. Antonio Brown, member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the time, got mad at something during the course of the game, stripped off his uniform, took off his shoulder pads, threw them at the bench.
Yeah.
Started to march off the field, took off his t-shirt, took off his receiving gloves, threw them into the crowd, paraded through the end zone with his hands above his head, half naked, and then walked through the tunnel not to be seen again.
And then on social media, a couple of hours later, released a song. So, and Bruce Arians was pretty direct after the game. He's played his last game for us. He's no longer a member of the club. Apparently, Arians tried to get him to go into the game twice, and he refused. So, another chapter, another episode, and a very sad story of a football player. And if you watch Tom Brady's comments last night, if you read between the lines, there's something more at stake here than there is just a football player leaving the field.
Well, look, the guy has been troubled throughout his career.
Yeah.
This is not the most shocking thing we've ever seen or heard.
No.
I can't say that it was expected, but it wasn't. If it was going to be if somebody was going to do it, you're not shocked that it was Antonio Brown. And
how many chances does a guy get, Bob?
No more. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, if he had done what he did in the locker room after the game, or even at halftime,
right,
or even before the game,
not in such a public place,
then that opens up the possibility of some wide-eyed general manager saying, well, the guy's got great talent, which he does. We could use him. Yeah. We'll go get him.
Right.
But to do that in front of 60,000 people or however many there were in attendance and on television live, I don't think opens the door to any more opportunities for him.
Yeah, this is the time where and Brady put it, I think, pretty succinctly. You have to take a step back and say, okay, what more is at stake here? What's going on?
Well, for him personally.
Yes, that's what I mean. So,
yeah, and interestingly enough, what you didn't hear a lot of was teammates not liking him or being concerned about a lot of stuff. This kind of came out of the blue.
Yeah, it did. Well, and listen, Brady's, and not to dwell on Tom Brady, but Brady has been one of his great advocates. Remember, he was the one who wanted him in New England as well, because he knows what talent he has and knows if you allow it.
Yeah. No questioning his talent. I mean, the guy is a great receiver, but he's got issues.
Does he ever?
And he demonstrated that in the most public forum possible on Sunday. And I believe he has now played his last football game. And what remains to be seen is, will he get help? Will he live to regret his actions?
Good point.
Some hockey talk today. Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com will join us. And the program will continue after these messages. And we are back. It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the Bob McCowan podcast. And we are excited to have our two guests with us today, two regulars on this program, to begin a new year. Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com, both with us. Happy New Year to both of you.
You too. All you gents?
Yep. Back to all of you, 2001, get the bleep out.
Thank you. We were chatting very briefly during the break about the outdoor game, which, of course, was a stupid idea when they first came up with it, completely about greed, lust, and pestilence. And I have nothing against pestilence, but greed and lust bother me. And
greed only bothers you when it's somebody else, Bob.
Exactly. There is no denial of that fact. But this stupid idea has been perpetuated now for like decades. And there is nothing dumber than 60,000 idiots in Minnesota sitting in a baseball stadium, 1,000 yards away from the ice surface, watching a bunch of ants move around. That they can barely see the players. They can't see the puck. And the relevance of all of this on television is completely lost on me. Completely. It's not cute to see uniforms that they just made up and pretend were from, you know, the dinosauric era when hockey was first invented in Minnesota.
You obviously watched.
No, I didn't watch.
Oh.
But I saw photographs, so I know. And what the hell were those? What the hell were those uniforms?
People still have photographs.
Well, on your little phone thing, you know, they post stuff. You may not know anything about that, although you work in that business. Oh. Anyway, is anybody with me on this? Is it time to end this charade? And you know, I mean, you can't really put people in arenas now anyway because of COVID. But
well, you can in the United States. You can't.
Yeah, I guess you can do anything you want.
You can do anything you want south of the border. Kevin's back to normal, right, Kev?
Normal in what sense?
Good point.
You know. Yeah, it's the USA, so you can go to outdoor games at 100,000 people and ideally bring a gun with you too. So yeah. Everything's
that,
great.
That keeps
I
you
will
warm.
Say this. I mean, I've got to defend it to a degree.
Come on.
No, by and large, I agree with you. And trust me, from a working standpoint, it is a pain in the ass from a working standpoint. But I always try to look past that. And that's what I'm going to do right now and say that as an event, as a happening, it is fun to be there if you're there for the first time, because it is outdoors, and that's, you know, in certain markets where they haven't repeated it. Boston, we've had it twice. There's a great community feeling to it. Now, you know, I know we live in an era that community doesn't mean a whole lot, because community now is you get online and you have community through texting and Zooms and all of that. But I still like the feeling of being in a crowd where people are there for a common reason and a love of a sport. That is still very cool when you go live to the event. But once the puck is dropped,
yeah,
you know, once the puck is dropped, it's very challenged. There's very few good seats in these arenas. It's very costly. The weather usually works against you, not for you. There's all of those elements, but there is still an enchanting part when you're there and you're around 60 to 80,000 people who love being there, who love hockey. That's a neat experience, because if you're a hockey lover, typically you're anywhere from a crowd of four people in bleachers in a cold, dark rink to the, you know, the standard state of the affairs in the NHL, which is 18 or 20,000 seats. But for that little, if you will, cloistered group of 60, 80,000, it can be fun.
Well, good for you. I'm so glad that.
Well, there are parts of it that the whole concept of after the game in Edmonton, the Montreal Oilers game in 2003,
the first one,
which. It took them six more years to really get to the point where they said we should try it again. And the only reason it happened was that NBC had lost the rights to the Gator Bowl. And so they lost the Gator Bowl, and all the guys at NBC came over to the NHL office and said, listen, we have a three-hour window. Can we do an outdoor game? And it was at the right place at the right time. And that ended up being the game in Buffalo between the Penguins and the Sabres, which really was an event. It got huge coverage on non-traditional sports television, whether it be CNN or Fox News or NBC Nightly News. The problem is that these things they wear out. And so a real national event, and I think that I really do think there have been a couple of them that are national events. I think the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings at the Big House was a national event. You know, I think Pittsburgh and Washington in Pittsburgh outdoors, and the one that, by the way, that Sid got David Steckled, you know, was a national event. But the problem becomes is that they're not all national events. And as much as I like Minnesota and I like the St. Louis Blues, it wasn't really a national event anymore. And that becomes really the issue, I think, that Bob's trying to point out.
No, I'm trying to say it's bad hockey in a bad environment. It was an interesting idea almost 20 years ago, and I understand that. But the novelty of this should have worn off.
But the novelty, sorry, Mike, but the novelty wears off when two things happen. Fans don't pay for tickets, and corporate partners don't contribute. And if you can still find a way to generate fan interest locally,
look,
and corporate partners, then you're going to keep doing it.
We're not, I know Z wants to jump in here, but we're not stupid. And I certainly am not among the stupid. There are plenty of stupid people out there. We understand it's a cash grab. It's always been a cash grab. It's been nothing more than a cash grab. It isn't about enhancing the future of the game. It isn't about attracting new fans.
Oh, and
manifested itself? Has that been accomplished? Show me the evidence, because I don't think they can. It's a one-off. It's a fluke. And I've seen enough of it. I saw it once. I thought, okay, you know, playing in 20 below zero, where the ice is crap, where the play is disheveled, the fans would boo if you took any one of those outdoor games and moved them indoors and had people pay to see that, because the game is not even a shadow of what it is indoors. The game is just not meant to be played in those conditions. Okay. Now, and here's the other thing. You want to do this once every 3 or 4 years, fine, go ahead. I'm not going to complain about that. But to do it multiple times every year is nothing more than for the money, dollars and cents.
Yeah.
We can't get, excuse me, we can't get this league to run a World Cup, but they'll run outdoor games.
Well, outdoor games are easier to run than a World Cup.
I get it. But a World Cup is of some significance to all hockey fans, not just ones in Minnesota or St. Louis. Go ahead, Z.
I've just been sitting here in stunned silence, and some would say that would be normal, because one of the great entrepreneurs in our country who is hosting this podcast, who is always looking for revenue streams, is sitting here making the fact that this brings in a lot of money as a sidebar to ice conditions, okay? The fact is, Bob, 60,000 people, you can call them stupid, whatever you want.
Well, they are.
60,000 people braved -5 degrees Fahrenheit, not Celsius, to sit there. Maybe they didn't see the rink, whatever, but they still paid to go in there. Those jerseys that you don't like, okay, make money because people buy them, okay? Ooh. Give the people what they want. So as long as these individual markets come to the National Hockey League and say, you know what, we are interested, we don't give a rat's you know what about what the rest of the country feels about it, in our individual market we think this would be cool, and so it's going to keep going. And that is bottom line.
You're not wrong. And I
by the way, by the Mike, you got to understand, Bob is a hockey purist. Bob is a hockey purist. It's for the love of the game.
Yeah, I don't go to a game indoors or outdoors, so I don't give a crap where they play.
And by the way, there's only two more this year. One in Hamilton.
Only. Good.
There's only two. Well, there was six, I think. One in Hamilton, if the province of Ontario will allow more than 1,000 people to congregate.
Don't bet on it.
I know. And in Nashville, where they will be allowed to congregate.
And they will.
And they will congregate, and they'll have a good time, and then we'll all want to go to Nashville for the party. Right, Mike?
Well, you could have just said we all want to go to Nashville. The last part just a given, is it not? But well. And here's the other thing, Bob, and I'm not going to say that every one of them has been riveting. I understand that the attraction from a national level has kind of faded. Like I said, the local markets are still interested. But I got to say, one of the coolest things that I've got to do in this business, we won't go over how many centuries that's been, but was in Kevin's hometown, I believe 2010, Fenway Park. Having grown up a Boston Red Sox fan, we had a half hour skate there the day before the game. It was snowing. You're skating under the Green Monster. And I got to skate not only with Ken Hodge, but with one, arguably the biggest goon in National Hockey League history, Dave the Hammer Schultz. Okay. If you can tell me that there's a lot more cooler things that you get to do in this job, There's not many. That was awesome. I remember, and the best part of that game, Kev, was that, okay, it's the Flyers and the Bruins. You're at Fenway Park. This is so cool. It's snowing. Bobby Clark and Bobby Orr come to the center ice dot to do the ceremonial opening faceoff. This is all about Boston, and in typical Bobby Clark fashion, he does not let Bobby Orr, the hometown hero, win the faceoff, and then Bobby Clark scoops the puck and puts it in his pocket, which is the most Flyer Bobby Clark thing ever. I just thought, you know, we talk about these things, and yeah, did the Minnesota outdoor game have an impact for me? No. But the Michigan game that you guys brought up and that game at Fenway, those are memories I will never forget. I thought those were really cool. Trouble is, there's not enough of those memories anymore because it does get repetitive.
It gets repetitive, and there aren't that many unique sites. I mean, I went to the one at Wrigley. That was neat, too, because I frankly, I'd never seen a ball game at Wrigley. So that was kind of fun. But and again, there's so we're beyond, I guess, the cookie cutter era of major league ballparks. They do put some nice ballparks together now, but it's still challenged in that it's a small surface and a big field and seats are far away. Too many seats are at slightly above ice level. So when you're sitting there, you just see heads going by the top of the dasher.
People still buy them, Kev.
Oh, they do. They absolutely do. And to that point, the league could spend some of the gross take it brings in and put up better visuals. They could put up bigger screens and bigger TVs. So when you've paid all that money, you don't feel that dreadful disappointment, which is to say, where's the game, right?
Well, for the price of the tickets, they ought to give everybody a 55-inch television set to sit on their lap while they're watching the game.
Are you kidding,
you can't
Bob?
See screw all see, be otherwise.
Did you see the Boxing Day prices? You can get a TV cheaper than you can get a Leaf ticket when they allow people in.
Well, that's not saying much for the Leaf ticket.
By the way, I think one of the other aspects is that, and this was always part of the plan, is you know that the league has changed its philosophy of outdoor games when you put an outdoor game at the same time as you put the Ottawa Senators and the Toronto Maple Leafs playing on national television in Canada.
Yeah.
So I think the league understands that the focal point of the outdoor game has changed. Over the years, what they need to do is, to Kevin's point, is try to find points of differentiation. You know, I think they thought Lake Tahoe would be different last year. I'm not sure it worked. You know, the Big House was spectacular. It was absolutely unbelievable. I'm a bit of a cynic about outdoor games, but that to me was something memorable that I will never forget being there. Because it wasn't because of the hockey, it was because it was a big event, and it was a party of 104,000 people, and that made it worthwhile.
If they played game 7 of the Stanley Cup final in an outdoor arena or outdoor stadium with 100,000 people in it, I'd get it. To play a meaningless game between two schlep teams in the middle of the season in a 100,000 seat stadium is nothing more than a cash grab. Now, Z is right. Nobody appreciates a cash grab more than me. Nobody will promote a cash grab more than me. I'm appreciative of it, sensitive to it, and understand it completely. But let's call it what it is. Let's not wax eloquent about the greatness of the event and the need to satisfy the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people who otherwise would never see the Minnesota whatchamacallits play a hockey game because the arena only seats 18 or 19,000.
Yeah.
And that's just a pile of BS.
Yeah. But would you take one of your bottles of wonderful tasting wine and go out there and just promote it as, hey, here's some grog that you can have with your craft dinner. Yeah. Like that. No, you're going to say, look at tragically hip wine. Come on. By the way, am I getting paid for this gig or, but, hey, you know, you're not going to...
A bottle of wine in your future.
You're going to... The first, as you know, the first job of marketing is to boost up the image of a product. And that's what they're doing. So,
but I don't... you know what? I understand all that. I just don't have to like it.
No.
That's right.
So you're stop right. Selling to the unsellable. Thank you.
We're not selling to you.
I would like... No, it's a waste of time.
There's also a lot of college football bowl games that are on this time of the year that are also horrid to watch.
You're 100% right.
But there's a lot of people watch. So a lot of this does come down to eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. If you like hockey and you're sitting around on New Year's Day, you'll watch that game, frankly, no matter where it is. And I think, again, going back, if you're in that community and it has a novelty within that community, be it because first time, be it because of venue, whatever, I think it works. And it adds to, you know, as we all know, the all important hockey related revenue that goes into the pot that helps all of that. Not my business to run their business, but it does make prudent financial sense. I'll say one thing, and this may end up being a shameless segue and maybe not, but
it already has been. So,
Well, I'm just segueing, you were marketing.
Yes.
That if they ever go back to the Olympics, I hope they do someday, the gold medal game outside with 100,000 people in the arena, that'd be pretty cool. I'd a lot of people would tune in for that.
So I want to,
but that's that's my point. If it's a significant event, it's not just another game in the middle of the year.
Correct.
If it's absolutely meaningful, I'm going to watch. I'm not going to watch because it's outside. I'm going to watch because it's meaningful. And the fact that it's meaningful with 100,000 people in attendance, okay, I'll put up with that. Of course, they'll never do it because...
No, but the IOC actually... Kevin's given the IOC an idea now. And there's a Shazam moment for the IOC and the International Ice Hockey Federation for Italy.
Yeah.
Finding a soccer stadium, near Milan... That will house a hockey game for 100,000 people.
It's not a horrible idea, but the IOC can screw up a one-car parade, so they'll find a way.
This leads to somewhere else, which is I would do it sooner. I would do it in Paris in 24 as the Olympic event for 22. I'd do it outside in Paris in 24, and then I would come back again in 26 and do it there.
Oh, so you do it. Oh, I see. So you hopscotch between summer and winter games.
Yeah, for this time, permanently, I make it a summer event for all the reasons that make it easy. NHL players will be there. NHL itself doesn't care. It doesn't interfere with the NHL schedule, which is where this really is the only meeting point on this thing is to take it to the summer games.
Well, interesting. That's another topic of conversation. But I mean, it parallels what happened with basketball, right?
Correct.
Well, you know, the International Ice Hockey Federation has tried something like that, and that was at the World Juniors a few years ago when Canada and the U.S. played at the Bill Stadium. I believe it's called Highmark Stadium now. And, you know, they packed the place. It was in a snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
It was so – now, to Bob's point about how the play went, okay, it was snowing so hard that every 5 minutes – they had to come out with garbage cans and shovel off the ice. But I remember somebody in the press box saying to me, you know, this kind of bastardizes the entire tournament because of the ice conditions. I said, you were talking about bastardizing a tournament that is in Canada every 3 out of 4 years, which is aimed at home ice advantage for Canada. I mean, the World Juniors isn't a level playing field. So I kind of laughed and said, you know what? This is a spectacle. I didn't talk to anybody on either of those two teams who didn't enjoy that game. And that's my little pet peeve about the World Juniors. I do wish that they were still going on. That's another subject. But, if you expect that the quality of play is going to be the same under those conditions as it will be indoors, well, you know, that's as Bob would say, then you're an idiot.
I'm actually shocked that there was snow in Buffalo on New Year's Eve outside. that to me is the most shocking thing.
You know, they didn't watch Eyewitness News that night for the AccuWeather, eh, John?
Well, Kevin spent more time in Buffalo than any of us, so...
All right, everybody shut up for a minute. We got to take a break here. I think we're long. We'll come back and chat some more, perhaps. We'll continue after these messages. Well, we're back, as best we can be described. KP DuPont, Mike Zeisberger, John Shannon, yours truly, Bob McCowan. Let's get off this outdoor nonsense.
Well, you mean we could talk about postponements and then we just sit here in silence for 20 minutes.
Well, let's talk about where we're at with the National Hockey League, since we got a couple of hockey pucks with us. Is the NHL making the right decision by shutting down games kind of willy-nilly, randomly? You know, if too many guys have COVID, we're going to shut it down? Or should they have just locked everything down for 2 or 3 weeks and said, you know, call us in 2 weeks and let's see where we're at, and just can't basically cancel everything, which is essentially what they did. But I mean, have they handled it the right way? What do we think, Kevin?
Well, it's certainly a mess. And I was in favor of going with your approach, which was to close it down around the holiday break and keep it closed for the first, say, 10, 12, maybe 14 days of January, and see where that stands. That would have been my approach. And I don't know if that's right. And all history will show. Other sports now are, as you well know, gravitating toward let them play unless they're very, very symptomatic, right? I respect more the Canadian approach with this, which is proceed with extreme caution. That's not the way we do things in the U.S. and much to our chagrin usually. So I'd be more in the caution thing. And hey, listen, I'm as sick of this as anyone. I would love to be able to take the blind approach to say, screw it, just play and let's see where they fall. But maybe it's my age group. Maybe it's just that I've seen too much, but I'd be very, very cautious. So I agree with much of what they're doing, but they're sort of this little bit pregnant now, and that usually makes for a mess.
Well, I mean, you know, we could say the same thing about what we went through 18 months ago. You're sailing through uncharted waters. Now, to Kevin's point earlier, you know, you watch any sporting event in the U.S. right now, and it's like, oh, is there a pandemic? Because people are jammed in the seats. There doesn't seem to be an issue. And I've got to think, Kev, that there's got to be a lot of owners, especially American owners, that like aren't really sympathetic about what's going on in Canada. It's just like, hey, man, we still need these revenues. You know, we want to get in as many games as possible before, you know, maybe who knows where this is going, where they do have to shut it down for a couple of weeks. So I think because, you know, you're talking about two philosophies between two different countries. And you know, sometimes, as we all know, and this is breaking news, owners don't look at the greater good or the big picture. They go look at, as to what we talked about in our first segment, how much money can we still make out of this?
Right. As do the players. Let's not forget. I mean,
they're business partners.
Yeah. The players have been calling it entertainment ever since they started to boost the salaries from ham and cheese sandwiches to what they are today. So, they're all in this for the money. They're all in it for a business. I get that. But at some point, I reached this point long ago. I think you have to do everything you can do reasonably to preserve someone's health.
Well, I look forward to your one-on-one with Mr. Jacobs so he can explain the greater good.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting because one thing, old man Jacobs, who now is 81 years old, he is on a private basis. He's very particular about his health. He's very cautious about that. So that's a great idea, Z. If I could get a hold of him, that'd be a good conversation.
But I actually think that the amount of cancellations that occurred, I think we're close to 90 games now that have been postponed. Some for reasons of well, if we're not going to put people in buildings in Canada, then we're going to be then wait and then plug them in during the Olympic break or after the season was supposed to
win. Not that many, John. The reason these games are getting canceled is because they don't have enough players.
Oh, no, Bob. But what we're seeing in Canada is games that are being postponed because owners can't put people in seats. That's why, like, the Carolina Hurricanes were supposed to be here this today. You know, the Boston Bruins were supposed to be in Montreal that 14th of December. Those were postponed because they couldn't sell tickets and couldn't sell concessions. That's hey, why John, they did it.
John, so, right now in Quebec, you can't go outside after 10 o'clock.
Yeah. I mean, so
yeah, that's a totally different reason. There's a provincial mandate in Quebec that eliminates the possibility of people going into an arena, even if you could.
Winnipeg's next three home games have been postponed because the Jets aren't allowed to put people in the arena. That's why. Now, are there health reasons too? Absolutely. But I would tell you that there's a lot more games recently that have been postponed because teams in Canada aren't allowed to put full capacity in their arena.
So we should expect that Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment will cancel all Maple Leaf and Raptor games from here on until they're allowed to put people in the seats.
Tell you what, well, the Raptors aren't because the NBA has a different philosophy. The NBA has a different philosophy. But I'll tell you right now.
Well, but wait, John, you can't have it out of both sides of your mouth. If the teams are allowed to postpone games, then the NHL is allowing them to do that.
No. The NHL is doing it on their behalf, Bob. Understand, the NHL is doing... Listen, the difference is because the league controls inventory and scheduling. That's one of the jobs and the mandates of the National Hockey League. It schedules the games. So trust me, there is a ton of conversation between the member clubs and the league office saying, listen, you know, do you want to play this game? No, we don't want to play this game. Hopefully in 3 weeks, we can put people in the arena. That's what's happening. That's exactly what's happening. There's no coincidence that, for instance, Saturday's game, the Ottawa Senators, was played in front of, 800 people, simply because it was a national game and they can generate enough revenue from television. The same thing will happen on Wednesday night when the Edmonton Oilers are in town, where they have to oblige the national rights holder. But a Monday night game against the Carolina Hurricanes, we're putting that on the back burner, baby. We're going to put that on the back burner. That's exactly what's happening now. And it can happen easier because they can fill these games into the Olympic break. That's what's happened.
Can you just clear a point for me then, John? So what's happening with the Raptors home games?
They're being played.
And who's in? Is there anyone in the stands?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
And you're...
But you know, you've seen Adam Silver's comments. We have to learn to live with it.
Right. But your interpretation there is, because Adam Silver can say what he wants, your interpretation there, I assume, would be that the NBA has such a fat television contract.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that there are people in the stands or not.
Understand there's a lot different between having one of 30 teams not have people in the building versus seven teams in Canada.
Right.
There's a big difference. I mean, listen, the Vancouver Canucks, the game on the 5th of January was postponed. They can still put half the people in the building, about 9,000 people. It was postponed. But Saturday's game against the Ottawa Senators will be played because that happens to be a national TV night.
Is that the same, John, Colorado playing in Toronto Saturday?
I suppose so. I haven't looked at closely as much at the Maple Leafs as I had the teams in the West, Mike. But, there's an obligation that, again, it goes back to the partnership between the players and the owners. I think it's pretty obvious.
Well, the Toronto Raptors played a basketball game with virtually no regular players and got beat by Cleveland by about 100 points.
45, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and listen, Montreal played in Florida on Saturday afternoon with 5 defensemen and 11 forwards. And, you know, they were in the same boat. They actually made it a competitive game, only lost 5-2.
Well, I'm not sure that's, you know, I mean, how many of those were regulars? How many of those 16 players were on the team? Because the Toronto Raptors had a bunch of guys played 30 minutes that
weren't
even NBA players.
But again, I think that goes to the different philosophies between
the
two.
Well, I agree. And what I'm trying to get at is, which is right? As observers of both sports, well, of all sports, which is the right philosophy? Because they're clearly different. Kevin, what do you think is right?
Personally, I again, I'll go back. I guess I'm the extremist in this, the extreme caution. I'd be shutting down. And also, in combination with the factor that you just brought up, you're having people come through the wickets paying major league prices for minor league product.
Correct.
That is on a consumer basis. Now, I could make a real good Boston joke here and talk about that Montreal game and say there was really no difference. But you know, it's hard. It's some of these games are less than exhibition level, and I rail on about that all the time about charging regular season prices for exhibition games in the NHL. So it's, again, I suppose on the massive games, as John's talking about, only one NBA team in Canada.
Yeah,
I suppose when you blend it all into the porridge, there'll be more good games than bad. But boy, on an individual basis, if I'm that fan, and I'll pick a team here, Chicago, is going that night and seeing a dreadful product, that really doesn't help.
Well, you know what, I'm kind of with Kev on this, is that I look more towards the cautious as opposed to anything else. But I mean, we're kind of talking about apples and oranges here with the two sports, because in basketball, let's face it, guys, how many guys are really integral to a basketball team? 7, 8?
Right.
So if you get 2 or 3 guys that can't play because of, for whatever reason, COVID or whatever, how much does that water down the product? Because you've only got a finite amount of players. And so I think, number one, that's a huge difference. And let's put it this way. It wasn't that long ago, and the NBA has taken some measures against this, but that, you know, people would pay top prices because LeBron was coming to town. And then LeBron, oh, you know what? He's going to take a maintenance day when he comes to your town, and you bought freaking tickets 4 months ago so you could take your family to see LeBron James. So I think, you know, when I say apples and oranges, there are distinct differences in philosophies and a makeup of the teams that has helped cause this kind of difference in how these leagues look at doing this.
It's a question that we should talk about more, and we don't have enough time to get really into it. But I mean, the Toronto Raptors played the Golden State Warriors at the beginning of this latest COVID outbreak.
Yep.
And the Warriors, I believe, sat all 5 starters, did not even bring them across the border.
Mm-hmm. That's the other issue.
And it wasn't because they tested positive. They just gave them the day off, and they didn't want them going through across the board. Who knows why? You know, I'm surmising why is the truth. But is that a problem? I mean, should that kind of stuff be allowed? You know, there was a time where owners, general managers would be fined, punished for not putting their best product on the field of play. And maybe understandably in the middle of COVID, but that whole philosophy is completely gone.
Well, both leagues have rewritten their rules in order to try to make sure that they not necessarily have the best bodies. They just have warm bodies to play the games. You know, the NBA was, you know, being able to sign, I think it's 3 players from the G League on 10-day contracts at one time to play the games. And then the NHL with adding the taxi squads. And yet the taxi squads, you can't be a player making more than $1 million. So they're trying to, both leagues are trying to get their way through this with their fingers crossed that by the 1st of February, by the Olympic break, that we are in a better place, and that Omicron has not affected us nearly as much as we thought it might. And that we can get back to full arenas, and cross-border travel is much easier. Those are the issues between the two leagues in my mind. And let's face it, this is very much an issue of the Canadian governments and the public health authorities in our country.
Yeah, well,
which is out of the NHL's hands.
Correct.
And look at how fluid, guys. Look at how fluid everything is. I mean, up until last week, up here, you had, you know, a player, whomever, had to quarantine for 10 days. And now if you're asymptomatic, and now it's down to 5 days. So all of a sudden, guys that, you know, you thought were going to be gone for a week and a half, boom, they're back in your lineup 5 days later. So, you know, who knows? I mean, it could be different tomorrow. It could be different next week. And that's what it's a moving target. And that's what we're dealing with. And that's what these leagues are dealing with.
These, you know, we're talking principally about the two major indoor sports. And, you know, we're all sympathetic to the fact that the transmission of this disease indoors is much more likely than it is outdoors. But we are only a few weeks away from spring training in baseball. What the hell is going to happen there? Nothing? Is are they going to operate normally because it's an outdoor scenario?
They have a CBA first?
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, we assume there will be one. I don't know whether we should assume, but if there's a CBA, which brings us back to another, you know, Canadian element in this, and that's the Toronto Blue Jays. Are they going to be going back to Buffalo, back to Dunedin? Are we going to go through that whole scenario again? Because if this doesn't clear up by, well, March, early April, I don't think the Toronto Blue Jays and the rest of baseball be coming across the border to play games at the Rogers Centre. Do you?
No.
What a mess.
Well, the other factor, of course, here is, let's not forget, baseball is an outdoor game. So I think
it I mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets a little more rope. I would say this. I would think the prudent thing now for the NHL, prudent for lack of a better word, I guess, is we're all expecting, as we sit here today, that a substantial number of these 90 games will get massaged into that Olympic break in February. I'm not so sure of that. If this is going to rage, especially here in the U.S., if this is going to rage throughout January, the prudent thing might be for them to say, let's live with this Olympic break. Let's not jam games into this, and let's push the season out 3 weeks at the other end. That because I think what we're going to get into here, at least with the variables we've got today, I think we'll get into that makeup period when they massage in, let's pick a number, 48 of the 90 games, and 48, 24 of those will get postponed. So I would say the way this is gravitating is live with that Olympic break, because you'd have to bring them back probably with a week to go in the Olympic break to have some sort of a training camp again to get legs moving so that they could resume play somewhere around February 23rd or 4th.
That's a great point, Kevin. I don't know what the TV contracts play into when the NHL has a drop dead date to finish. I know that last year the Olympics played a little part in that. But obviously there's been an exchange of TV rights south of the border. But the one thing, look it, I mean, I don't proclaim to be a doctor on TV or in real life, but you know, one thing that we've seen, and to your point about backing it up a little bit into the summer, is that as the weather gets warmer and more people go outside, the last two summers, the numbers seem to have fallen in terms of COVID. So maybe you have a little bit from a scientific point of view, maybe you have a little more wiggle room if you do extend it into the summer a little bit. John, what's the TV situation with the NHL, and do they have a drop dead
date? I don't think they
do. John.
I don't think they do. I think the biggest issue, guys, is between the two countries. And there's a guy sitting at his house in Brandon, Manitoba, wanting to know why he can't go to a Jets game, and yet he can see the Green Bay Packers have 60,000 people at a game. I think that's the bottom line, is the frustration between Canadian fans and American fans, albeit for the right reasons. And you have to respect the public health authorities. But that becomes the issue, how both countries have measured this. And that's the frustration I think the NHL particularly is going through right now.
And here are four guys sitting here, and we all, I think, agree that we're not sure which is the right philosophy.
I don't think anybody knows.
No, that's the point. Guys, always interesting. Thank you very much. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Happy New Year. And we'll bug you somewhere down the road. Thank you, boys.
Same to you, lads.
All the best to you guys. Happy New Year.
Shannon and I will return after these messages. Well, before we bid everybody a fond adieu, some parting shots, if you will. I don't use that anymore. Used to do that all the time.
Yeah, I think he probably sold it, though, because it was all about the money, right?
No, well, if it was sold, it wasn't sold by me.
Oh.
And if it was sold and there was money involved, I didn't get any of it. So
it's probably the latter.
That's all you need to know.
It's probably the latter. Yeah, it's probably the latter. So,
well, maybe we can sell parting shots on this program.
Get the sales department.
Yeah, all we got to do is find them first. Anything in particular that we did not address or cover here?
I just think that the one thing that we didn't address when we talk about the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks is when are we going to start discussing whether there should be an all-star game in Las Vegas or not?
Well, of course there shouldn't be, but there will be.
Yeah, I think that that's, and when you think about the amount of travel that will occur, the cross-border travel, I wonder when that discussion starts to take place in the Players Association office and in the NHL office in New York.
Well, I don't even think there's going to be a discussion, John.
Well, you don't think
to that... have the discussion implies that there is a debate. There isn't.
So you're having the game.
I'm not, but they are.
Oh, okay. So you think that it's just a fait accompli that the Olympics will be postponed as they have for hockey players, but we will have an All-Star weekend.
Yes. And okay. if the IOC offered the NHL $10 billion to go to Beijing, they'd go. Screw COVID. They'd go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
no. What happened in 1974? You know what they said at the Watergate hearings? Follow the money.
Well, it's pro sport. That's what it's about. We are just like the guys peeking over the outfield fence. And trying to enjoy the sport itself.
We are the knothole game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But not for long, like the National Football League. We got to get out of here. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. See you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.